So good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
First of all, I want to thank you for agreeing to do this interview on behalf of the African American Culture and Historical Museum. Part one of the interview deals with demographics and family history. I'm first going to ask you some simple demographic questions. These questions may jog your memories, but please keep your answers brief and to the point for now. We can go into more details later in the interview. Please say and spell your name.
Janice, it's my first name, J-A-N-I-C-E. My last name is Thompson, T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N.
What is your date of birth, including the year?
February the 7th, 1939. I have a birthday coming.
Okay, we'll have to celebrate. How would you describe your ethnic background?
African American.
What is your religion, if any?
I don't belong to a specific religion.
Okay.
Anything.
What is the highest level of formal education you have completed?
Master's degree in social work.
What is your marital status?
Divorced since 1972.
Okay.
No plans to remarry.
All right. You're happy with your life, huh?
Well, except for the
$10,000. Okay. How many children do you have?
I have 4 children.
How many siblings do you have?
I have 2 half sisters.
What was your primary occupation?
It seems to me everything I've done has been social work related. I've had nurses training and graduated from LPN school. That's been some time ago. I had planned to go on, but I had got cancer and couldn't do it, and didn't go back to college for some time. And then I went back, got an undergraduate and a graduate degree.
And if you are retired, what age did you retire?
68. Okay. Yeah, I think 68.
So when you said you went back to school, you stopped and just worked for a little while, and then you went back to school, or just tell me a little bit more about that.
I got married.
Oh, you got married, okay.
And I had children, and in 1964, my youngest daughter was born. Right after she was born, they had been testing me for cancer. It was a long process, but anyway, I started to hemorrhage, so then I think at that point, they did more research, and so I had cancer for a couple of years, I guess, and had surgery, hysterectomy. They took out everything they could take out.
Okay.
My appendix, everything. Okay. They don't want it, so that was good. So, but it took me a while to recover from that. And once I did, see, I think I worked for a while at public housing. I worked at public housing as secretary and coordinator to the seniors and children, and started some programs. So I worked there for a while.
Okay, and we're gonna get back to your work schedule shortly. So just curious in terms of how you're doing health-wise, are you in remission?
Yes, we hope so.
Okay.
I continually, they wanna test me, but so far it's been just fine.
Okay.
Been fine,
that's
been
great.
Fortunate, so.
Congratulations, that's great.
Yeah.
All right, so we're gonna move into part two, which is memories of childhood and youth. This part of the interview is about your childhood and youth. And once again, these questions might jog memories about other times in your life. But for right now, we're gonna focus just on this section. What was your family like when you were a child?
My mother was a young mother. She got pregnant when she was in 17, when she was 17. Of course, I didn't take all these thoughts into consideration until I was older, but she was a young mother, and that brought out a lot of things, but I won't get into that now, because then you'll be like my grandkids. Don't get Grammy started.
No, I'm fine. That's why you're here, for to talk, so that's fine.
So I was with my mother. My mother did not get married until she was pregnant. And they didn't stay married very long. You know how it was back in that day. If you got pregnant, you got married, and that was it. So she did. So I never lived with my biological father, but I knew him and I knew of him. And my mother being so young, that is the reason, and it's fortunate for me that I lived with both my grandparents off and on in the same town, in Ypsilanti. Okay, in Ypsilanti, my maternal grandmother and family lived on Frederick Street. And a lot of relatives from Canada also, family members lived around. And my paternal grandparents were from, well, a plantation in Newberry, South Carolina then. And wonderful people, my grandparents. I have a lot to say about them.
Well, go ahead. But, that's
well,
fine.
I used to, as I got older, I used to wonder. They never talked to each other. You would never hear them communicate or talk. But they knew each other well. She might say, "Benny, I want you to do this," and you do it. But they never, no loving things or anything like that. I used to always wonder why they're like that. And then when I think about it, as I got older, because neither one of them had ever had any schooling, I think they had come from Africa, but they won't talk about those, they don't talk about it. So you have to kind of figure out what it is that's bothering them or what. But anyway, my grandmother did housework, as a lot of elderly black people or young black women did clean houses in Ypsilanti, Ann Arbor. And my grandfather, my paternal grandfather, worked at a plant, a factory, Founders or something. They just now demolishing that place, I think. So he would come home black, had stuff all over him. And they had, besides my father, they had three daughters, Aunt B and Cora. And my father was only boy. I skipped something. So as a grandchild, I also had a cousin that stayed with them. This cousin was, he was a year or two younger than I, and he was very dark complected, you know. And I remember I would get mad. He wouldn't, because not only white people would say something about his color, but black people would too. Well, the black ones, I'd fight. I was just so angry about that as a kid. But his mother, my grandparents, was one of my grandparents' daughters, and she was white. She was prominently white. So as you get older, you think about what that could have done to their family situation. At least that's the way I think.
Right.
Because they would never tell you. But I know that Aunt May wasn't all black. I mean, everybody knew that, but nobody talked about it then at that time. So, and this was my very dark cousin's mother. So that
caused conflict.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But anyway, she got killed in a train accident early in life. And my grandparents never talked about her either. So since they couldn't read or write, my cousin, the boy that this is who I was telling you about, that his little of his background, we would, Grandpa would get paid in cash. I think that was already set up because he couldn't read or write. And he would bring the money home. And myself and Curdy, my cousin, we were kids, you know. We weren't even like in the sixth grade, I don't think, but we knew how to go to the post office and get a money order. Okay. So we would do that and make sure we'd write it out for him, pay bills. If we didn't do it, one of my aunts would do it. But it was a different situation for them.
So let me ask you about this whole thing with color, because that still continues to be an issue. So you experienced it early on because of your cousin. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so how did the family deal with all of that?
Both my aunts and my father went to work for Ford Motor Company after a while. This was after I was getting older and growing up. And they never talked about anything.
Okay.
They really didn't. They would not accept. I did say to my grandmother every now and then, I remember one thing she said, and I never will forget it. She was pouring a glass of something, and she said, "You know, when I work for those people, I always wanted a glass of lemonade or tea with some ice in it." You know? Mm-hmm. And she was so sincere and felt so strongly about that. I said, "Well, you know, well, let's get you some, Grandma, you know." But she was just like that. She always wanted a glass of ice tea.
That's when she was working in other people's homes and serving them.
Yeah, right. Helping us kids. Curdy and I'd take a bath on Saturday nights. That's only that. There was this big tub and they'd heat hot water on the wood stove and we'd take our baths in that house.
Now, once again, who is Curdy?
My cousin.
Your cousin.
One that his mother was so light complexion.
And he was, okay.
So my grandparents raised him. He was always there. I was
in and out.
Back and forth. That's a whole different story.
Okay. You'll have time. We'll be talking for a while. So you already talked a little bit about the type of work that your father did and your mother. Or
my grandfather.
Your grandfather. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's right. Your grandfather. Mm-hmm. So let me go back for a second. So were you born in Ypsilanti?
Born at University Hospital.
University Hospital.
In Iowa.
Okay. All right. So you already talked a little bit about some of your earliest memories as a child. Anything else you want to add in terms of some of your earliest memories as a child?
Well, I was a child staying with my grandparents and my mother off and on. I didn't stay with my mother all the time. I was at one of my grandparents' home because my mother married a man who was very handsome, tall, handsome, and a drunk, when he'd get drunk, and violent, you know.
Okay.
And when he got drunk, he'd beat my mother. It was always something I could. I took this all my year. I was young. I can remember that happening when I was 5 years old. Mm-hmm. I remember walking my mother to the police station here in Ann Arbor. She would press charges, of course. So I was about 5 or 6 years old. Took her to the bus station because I had learned to take the bus back and forth.
At five?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So I took her. And she was bleeding all the way. I can't remember what that time, but and we got on the bus and went to my grandmother's house. Well, you see, this became a monthly thing. And as I got older, I got tired of it. I got a little older, a little older. I was 18 when I got tired, really tired of it. And that was that. But it was a miserable, awful time.
Okay. Well, one thing is that's why even now we still need places like Safe House that provide services for battered women and men in some cases, but Certainly there's still a need even now.
Oh yeah, there's right. a need. But you know what I found also after being in social work is that a lot of times the women will not leave.
Right.
But so that was another education. Okay,
right.
Go ahead.
No, that's fine. Now, were there any special days, events, or family traditions you remember from your childhood?
For the maternal side of my family, yes, they had family reunions in Canada every year. They were just fantastic. I mean, I was looking at one of those pictures the other day. There were so many people because they were coming from everywhere. And the kids were saying, those Japanese people over there, look, they related to us. And said, yeah, somewhere down the line, or they would say that. Looking at all the variety
of colors
mm-hmm. here, you know, of colors.
Right.
So.
Because we're like a rainbow.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad they had that and learned that way because they're not color conscious. I mean, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter. The kids who are dark, but they're people, everybody's a person, individual to mm-hmm. whom, you know, the color doesn't matter. Although it sometimes affects the kids, because I've got one granddaughter, she's graduating in college now, and she has some, but she looks like she's white. She could pass for white. But I don't think, there's never been a problem because of color in our family that I know of, you know, I don't know everything, but I've noticed that they're all really good, because LB is very dark, and he would get. And I remember when, before he was born, his father was very dark. And he would, Dina told me that he would ask her, how is your mother gonna feel if the baby is dark like that? They don't say those things around me because I'm just, don't be right. talking to me about color. We're mm-hmm. all people. We can be. Don't get me started on that. I'm sorry. You said go back and think about it.
That's fine.
You don't know how many doors you're opening up here.
That's fine. Well, the thing of it is that within, it's interesting because within the black, the African American community, that becomes an issue, and you wouldn't mm-hmm. think it, but it's been for years, and it continues to be. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I know it is.
Now I want to ask you a little bit about the Canada connection. So you have family in Canada. So who do you have in Canada? I'm just trying to make the connection.
Most of the older people, like my grandmother's sisters and brothers and in-laws and all that, most of them have passed now. There are some of the younger kids that are there now. I haven't been in touch with them lately, but we have their addresses and all, and we try to contact. We didn't have a family reunion last year, but we had one the year before, and we're talking about getting together now to continue them, because
okay.
there are not so many of the family members there living anymore, but because they've all passed. But there are children and grandchildren there, and I don't know them as well
okay.
because it's getting back and forth and.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's so busy now doing their own thing, but we're going to plan to have one in the next year or so.
That's why it's nice to have family reunions.
Yes, it is. Yes.
How are holidays traditionally celebrated in your family?
They eat, and some of them drink, have a party, have a good time, but. Since the older members have passed, it's not as gatherings like we used to have, you know.
Right.
Because like my maternal family, I'm the oldest in this area, am I? Yeah, I think I am the oldest in this area. And I'm gonna be 78 on my birthday. And I was always, when I was a kid growing up, I always said, I'm not living in Ypsilanti all my life. And I did, that's a whole nother story. And I always believed in taking the kids to travel. And that's some of the problems I had with my husband. anyway, when I was married, I demanded that we take the kids places, you know. Mm-hmm. Mackinac and, you know, just different places. I took them to San Francisco with me. I had family. Anyway, I moved. After my kids were grown, I started moving. Moved to Colorado, lived in Denver a while. My youngest daughter and son were still not in school yet. But when they graduated, Dina graduated from high school in Denver, and she came back to Eastern to go to college. So I moved to California. And I stayed there and worked for a while. And,
and now you're back in Ypsilanti.
Well, I had gone and then come back to California again. I was in California, and when the bad earthquake they had, it was only when I was there then. And I worked for the government there, worked for the Navy and the Army. And those bases are closed now, I think.
Okay. Did your family have any special sayings or expressions during your time growing up?
Not that I can think of. My grandmother always lied. Do you ask her when's her birthday? She'd say 39.
She stayed 39.
She was 39 from the time I was 5 until the time she died. How old are you? 39.
Okay. I'm going to go back to a question that I missed here. Did you play any sports or join any other activities outside of school when you were growing up?
I took dancing lessons when I was young, ballet and tap, you know, it was, that was it. I was a cheerleader in high school. I was more athletic, like, I've always been kind of a tomboy, played softball. The boys would let me play with them. I was the only girl they'd let play.
You must have been pretty good, huh?
I was pretty good. Okay. My dad was a ball player, and you know, Matt Siegfried, do you know Matt?
I know Matt. Okay. Mm-hmm. He gave me your name.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Matt called me one day and he said, Janice, I got something for you. You said your dad played professional ball. He went to play professional ball. He didn't see. But he said, I got something for you. I wish I had brought it. I had some of that stuff with it. He was on a black league, professional.
The Negro League?
In 1939, and they had his three of the baseball players' pictures, and Matt saw them, and he printed them for me. Oh, I cried. It brought tears to my eyes, and it told about him graduating, and these three guys were playing in Chicago for the season, and so I've got it in frames at home. And then he also found my great-great grandparents.
Oh, how very special.
Oh, and they're so nice. But the picture that he brought me that he found online, my grandmother had that picture. I still have the original copy of that one. And then he found them on the internet. Only they were on the one that my grandmother had, there weren't the two babies, because one was my grandmother, it was my great-great-grandfather, but they had their grandbabies. Both him and his wife had one each other grandbaby. So one of them was my grandmother, one of the babies. I'll have to show you those sometimes.
I'll have to see
that. If
you
remind me, they're just fantastic. And Matt said to me the last time I saw him, he said, you know, I think I can get an original of that one of your dad, because it's kind of dark and faded. I said, man, I'm happy to get the one that you gave me, but it's up to you, you know. It was just fantastic to see them.
And so he did a little research.
He is fantastic at that. Mm-hmm. He really is.
Yeah, he's the one that gave me your name. Oh. So he's on the museum board as well.
Yeah, well, see, I'm working with him and a few others. There's about six of us on the south side working to give plaques to the fathers, people in the community who worked during their lifetime in Ypsilanti and promoting starting fight segregation and all. But it really wasn't all that bad. But like Eugene Beatty, you know, principal of the school, and both of his wife taught school in Detroit, and Mr. Francois, if you know some of those names of people, Dr. Bass, and all the prominent black people who lived in the community. And
right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so when thinking back on your school years, you just started to talk about school a little bit. What important social or historical events were taking place at that time, and how did they personally affect you and your family?
You mean like Dr. Martin Luther King and those kinds of things?
Well, during your school years, when you were like in elementary, middle, high school, anything that you can think of that had an impact?
Well, you know, when I was in school, other black kids went to school on the south side. You familiar with that? Other black kids went to school on the south side of town.
And talk about that more.
It was fine. Other teachers lived right around it. Most of the teachers lived right around in the neighborhood. Mr. Beatty lived around the corner down the block. The principal, you know, and there really was the teachers. I can remember where some of them live right now. Miss Vest was in Ainsworth Circle, and Miss Williams was up on First Ave in the big house. And our relationship with the teachers was different because it was like, they tell you, they do something wrong, they tell you, but they also tell your parents, too. You know, you can get away with stuff like these kids do these days. But they lived in the neighborhood, and they were respected, Dr. Bass and Mrs. Bass. Mrs. Bass was, Dr. Bass's wife was a scout leader, and I was in the Girl Scouts. So, you know, there all those people, and there wasn't a lot of prejudice. Have you heard about Ainsworth Circle? Someone could tell you more. Are you familiar with that?
Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Ainsworth Circle is an area on the south side that was built houses, nice houses in this, for white people. And what they did was they tried to make it so that there was only one entrance into this neighborhood, in Ainsworth Circle, which was true. It was all white and you wouldn't. Well, now it's just, it's amazing. Every time I ride through there, I think about this, and I ride through there a lot. But me and my friends, like my grandmother lived on Frederick and Short Street. It's in between First Avenue. Michigan Ave was the main drag. And when I say the south side, south of Michigan Avenue, that's where black people lived. So they built this houses with this one drive entrance. It was changed a little bit later, but that was the goal. So I hear now Matt could tell you more about this than I can, because a lot of it I didn't know. But he really got into it. But I said to him, Matt, you know what? When I was a kid, we would go through Ainsworth Circle and raise havoc. And he said, what did you all do? I said, we would run through there, ring the doorbell, and run. And he just fell out. And I said, but that was irritating to the people who lived there. I never will forget one day. Some lady, we didn't get far enough, I guess we heard her talking about, we had woke up baby up. Oh, we had a lot of fun running through there and ringing doorbells.
So I'm trying to
every Saturday.
I'm trying to visualize where that is in relationship.
What do you know about it, Sam?
I know the South Side, so mm-hmm. I'm just trying to.
You know where, let's see, what would be the main? Well, Harriet Street is on the back side of
right.
it. And, but if you went up Hamilton, if you went up Hamilton Street, the entrance would be only a block from Michigan. I'm trying to visualize this while I'm trying to tell you. Yeah. If you went up Hamilton Street, you could go into Ainsworth right after you. It's the first block after Michigan Avenue if you turned on Hamilton. Yeah. And then okay. it's the first driveway past Michigan Ave, first driveway going into okay. Ainsworth Circle. Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about, you're talking about the South Side and Ainsworth School in terms of your elementary, middle, high school. What
there was no middle school.
There was no middle school.
We went to Perry School until the sixth grade. You'd graduate after sixth grade. Then you would go to the high school, seventh grade through 12th grade. It was a whole different world for us who had been, you know, in school.
And you said a whole different world. Talk to me about that a little bit.
Well, because it was all white, and they did everything. There were very few black kids there doing much anything. I was not the first black cheerleader. Bobby Madison, young lady, she was the first black cheerleader there. Drum and Bugle Corps, which is a very sophisticated corps, really sharp uniforms, and all. The horn girl, one black girl on that. Wait. I graduated from high school in 1957, 57, 56, 55, 54. And it was a long time before she became Drum and Bugle Corps, too. That was really strange. The principal was white, of course. Oh, I can tell you a little story about something happened to me when I was in the seventh grade. What happened? Our teacher, she was a good teacher. She was white. We had no problems, so she was a good teacher. Anyway, she told us that there was going to be this contest. You write a paper or something, and if you won, you'd get to go on a trip with the principal to Lansing. Big deal. It was exciting to us. Yeah. But anyway, not many kids wrote anything, but I did write something, and I won. I can still remember what I wrote, but you wouldn't be interested in that, I know. But
I
anyway,
am in a minute, but keep going.
I won, and okay. they announced it. Or the PA, Janice Wilson, won the essay write contest. I said, oh, okay. So kids all laughed. They thought that was funny. So I thought it was funny, too, really. Especially what I wrote about. But anyway, the next day I went to school and the teacher was late coming. Well, she wasn't late, I guess she had been some. But when she came in, you could tell that something was wrong with her because it looked like, and she probably did cry because when I think about her, the type of person she was, she probably wasn't, she probably did cry. But she told me she wanted to talk to me and I went out with her in the hall, and she said, I can't remember how she said it now, but the gist of the thing was I didn't win the contest, that it was a mistake, that, and so I wouldn't be going anywhere with the president, you know, so, I mean, with the principal. So it didn't bother me. Well, I guess as a kid, I might have been a little upset. I can't remember how I felt, but I remember the situation and the results of it. And so I never did say anything else about it because I hadn't told anybody at home or anything like that because I didn't trust my mother and her husband. But so nobody ever said anything else to me about it, but we kind of figured it out.
I was going to say.
They didn't want a little black girl going up in Lansing with
the principal.
So they changed the thing. Mm-hmm. But after then, I didn't have any. And there were no black teachers at Ipsy High School at all at that time. A little later on, Mr. Briggs came, I think. Oh, and Leo Clark. He was another important person in the black community. He was a teacher. He was a really smart man.
I knew Mr. Clark.
Did you? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was it. I'm surprised I even went out for cheerleading, because you know that there's all this prejudice.
How did you talk to me a little bit about cheering and that kind of thing, being the only black on the team, on the squad?
I don't know. It was kind of an impersonal thing, because, you know, I think there were two Hispanic girls. I think they were Hispanic girls, and everybody else was white, but we never became friends or anything. And I just went in there cheered. I stayed on the squad for a couple of years, and then I decided. And the cheerleading, what do you call it? She wasn't really an instructor, but she was over taking care. She was a coach, and she coached different programs for kids. Or, you know.
So in terms of the trying out for it, who made the selection? Was that?
I don't remember. I think it was some of the coaches were involved. So it wasn't just our coach, and they select a committee or something of people. Mm-hmm. I can't remember.
Okay.
But they did finally. I think they thought one was, you had one that it was representative. Because, you know, even when I went to Lansing, and this was in the 50s, they would throw stuff at me. They weren't throwing stuff at, like, paper and pop things, and they were throwing stuff, you know. I think that's probably one of the reasons I kind of quit. But they only had one black cheerleader back then. So I think they were trying to...
One cheerleader at a time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So who supported you during those times when things were being thrown at you? Did anybody say anything or try to stop the students from doing that?
Not to my knowledge.
Not to your knowledge, okay.
I doubt it.
Now I want to go back for a second. So so when you were in elementary and middle, that was combined?
Yes.
So was that predominantly black at that time? Or?
No, once we graduated from the sixth grade at Perry School, we all went to Ipsy High School.
But while you were first through sixth grade, was that predominantly black?
That was all black at
all black.
School.
That's what I was, okay.
On the south side, Perry School was the school that all the black kids went to. And then when you went to the high school, it was primarily white. The kids from the kids that had finished the sixth grade at Perry School all went to the high school. No middle school. Sixth grade, seventh grade was high school then. Now it's a little different, but and the same with Willow Run at that time. They went to I think the sixth grade too, and then you familiar with Willow Run or not?
A little,
yeah. Well, mm-hmm. The same thing happened with them when whatever grade they ended at, which was probably the sixth also, I think, but. When they graduate, then they would go to high school. Everybody went to Ipsy High.
Ipsy High School. Yeah. So some of these things, questions you've covered, which is great. I do want to ask you a little bit about Harriet Street. So earlier, people talked about there being a lot of businesses when they were growing up on that Harriet Street, black businesses. Do you recall?
Well, I wouldn't say a lot. There were a few. There was a restaurant which the cab company, Reliable Cab Company, which one of our black neighbors operated. And it was, he just had a little office up in the front, and that's where he called the drivers. And it was a restaurant that a family had. The mother and her son operated that little restaurant. I worked there for a minute when I got to high school. And then up there, barbershops. There was a barbershop next to them. And then there was another barbershop, a little Curry's, a little bit closer, and a cleaner's, which Charles Ramsey had. And I worked in that cleaner's, you know, when I was out of school and on weekends. Those are, well, they expanded onto that building, and there are some shops there now. There's a hair braid shop and clothes, and a clothes shop. And still there's that, a barber shop in there, still Curry's. I don't know if he's still around or not. I don't think so.
So is
but
that
now, you know, there's also a neighborhood organization in there where people work out in the community. Is it Hope? No, it's not Hope. I forget what it is now. And Mrs. Goodman had a shop that was really very popular, ladies clothing. And that was there for a long time. It's not there anymore. And then the beer garden, I call it the beer garden. In class, they call it something else, something really classy, but it was the beer garden. You hear me? When I was growing up, it was the beer garden. And Mrs. Mahaley, I think, owned that. And then they had a restaurant next to it. And this restaurant, I was really a bad kid when I think about it sometimes. The restaurant had these big old fat pretzels. So Sunday, now this involves my grandparents, my father's parents, the one. My grandmother's very staunch church person, I mean, and my grandfather was just the opposite. Because on Fridays, when he'd get his money, he'd bring us the bill money so we could pay the bills. And then he'd get some liquor, and he'd stay drunk from Friday to Sunday. And on Sunday, he would sober up because he knew he had to go to work. That's where it went for him. She never complained about it, said he never talked about it. But they never knew this. When I was there and Curdy was there, we would get up because we had to go to Sunday school every Sunday. I don't care. And Curdy would say, Jess, I know I would tell Curdy first, I'd say, let's go get a pretzel. Let's don't go to Sunday school. And he said, Jess, Grandma gonna get us. You know she's gonna find out, you know. Somebody gonna tell her we wasn't. I said, ain't nobody gonna tell her that. They ain't thinking about whether we got. We just had the biggest time. Every Sunday, every Sunday I was there, because sometimes I'd be up to the other day. So he'd say, and Uncle Jimmy's gonna be at church. That was my grandfather's cousin or something. I said, oh, come on, let's go. Chicken. So I get it. We go up to skip Sunday school. And we got away with it because I was slick. We never got caught.
So you enjoyed those pretzels,
there were some
huh?
Sundays. I wouldn't do it on a holiday Sunday like Easter or something like that, but all the rest of them, we never got caught.
Good childhood memory, huh?
Yeah, oh, I love it.
So let me ask you about, so those were businesses owned by blacks, and mm-hmm. pretty much that's where people went for the restaurants and the hair and et cetera. So were there other places that you could not go into in terms of restaurants?
Well, they were so prejudiced you wouldn't want to go there. They had some shops that were selling clothes and things, so they let you buy, yeah. But Bama Restaurant was one of the places. It's down the hill from.
It's still there, isn't it?
It still is. It's different now, though. Because I went there and they only opened a short number of hours or something, but it was really racially prejudiced. Black folks didn't get there.
That's on Michigan Ave?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about when people came here to stay? They were traveling. Blacks came here. Where did they stay? Were there hotels or where did they stay?
Well, none of our people ever stayed at a hotel. They always stayed with somebody at the family. I mean, in the family, you know. Mm-hmm. There weren't any, there might have been some motels or something, but I'm not familiar with them at that time, because our family, and we had a lot of family in Detroit, you know, said they would come, the kids would come in the summertime, because, you know, they'd get to run around. They say they, from Detroit, they would say they're going to the country. We're going to the country, you know. And, oh.
Coming to Ypsilanti.
Okay. Ypsi was the country.
Country to them.
Because the apple trees and the trees and all this, and they loved coming. Only thing they didn't like, my first remembrance when they started coming, we didn't have an indoor bathroom. So we almost all got beat up about this, but we had to use the chamber bucket, you know, white bucket with the top on it and stuff. And so when the kids' cousins come from Detroit, that it would get full pretty fast, you know. And we were responsible for taking it down and dumping it. The outhouse was in the back. I still remember it was at the point, I guess, when it was just beginning to be able to get bathroom stuff on the poor side and whatever. So the chamber bucket would get almost full, and everybody, all the kids, we'd be up there whispering, who's gonna dump the bucket? And everybody, no, I'm not doing it anymore. So anyway, you would have to, because there was a stairway up there, and you'd have to take it downstairs and out the back door to the thing. Well, there was a little window at the top, almost at the top. And if we could get that window open, see if we could pour it. Well, we did that. We finally did that. We didn't get away with that one very long. No, only two or three times.
I wouldn't think so.
And my grandfather was one that, and we all got beat. If Child Services was here, then we could have had him put in jail for
Child Protective Services.
My grandfather had a belt that he kept hanging on the bathroom door to remind us of, you get a whooping. So I remember him whooping my aunt once, and she was grown. I mean, she, but he saw that stain, I guess, down the, because it was this old stuff that they made houses with. He saw that, and oh boy, he came looking for us. We got beat up pretty good on that one.
And times have changed in terms of that.
Thank God.
Yeah, in terms of that.
It wasn't long, too long after that, they had toilet put in the house.
Okay, so I'm going to move into part three. Mm-hmm. Which is adulthood, marriage, and family life. This set of questions covers a fairly long period of your life, from the time you completed your education, entered the labor force, or started a family, until all of your children left home, and you and or your spouse retires. So we might be talking about a stretch of time spanning as much as four decades. After you finished high school, where did you live?
In Ypsilanti, and then after I got married, we moved to Belleville, and had a nice home out there. My ex-husband's father was in numbers racket. You know, back in those days, everybody played the number. I mean, you had to have a numbers book, so it was illegal, but everybody played it, and then somebody always in the neighborhood picking up the numbers.
Kind of like the lottery now, huh?
It is exactly like the lottery. The government took over, so there's no more. They took it over, but we used the numbers racket. It was a big business, and George's father had a numbers racket, and they had, my ex-husband's family, they had money, and that's how they got it. I had no telling what else he was doing, because they were from Black Bottom in Detroit. There was all kind of stuff going on down there. But the numbers racket was a big thing for them. And so they had this big, I think this might have been one of the reasons I liked George too, because he had available to him all the things that I thought I wanted after having to fight with the stepfather and watch all this blood. Oh yeah, I was ready to go. So when we got married, we moved out there, had a really nice home with movie screen in it and a recreation room. George had a lot of parties there after college, and he was a Kappa. George loved Kappa more than he loved anybody else, his parents, me, his kids. And he just died a couple of months ago.
Oh, did he?
He's alone. He taught school in Inkster for a number of years. And
what was his name?
George Thompson.
Okay.
He was a coach out there for basketball, football for a while, but tennis. And he was a very aggressive person. He was unique. Anyway, we moved out there and we stayed there and moved to Ipsy. And by that time, I had two more children. I had Dina and little Greg. I had four kids, boy, girl. They were close in age, and boy, girl, close in age, four kids. And then George started teaching. Well, that's when he started teaching in Inkster. And he was always, I don't know how he felt, but he was a very assertive person. He didn't spend a lot of time with the kids or whatever I did. And we'd go some, but when he died, he had a mobile home that he would go to the football game, Michigan's football games, and they'd drink and party, and everybody would kind of depend they had. And my daughter now, and he started a driving school not too long after he retired, I guess. But anyway, he had this driving school business, and he remarried. And the kids, my oldest daughter and her husband, are kind of trying to run it now, keep it going, because it's good, because they don't teach driver's ed in the schools anymore.
They stopped that a few years ago.
Yeah. So, but he was a very assertive, very aggressive person. I don't want to talk about him because I don't have a whole lot of good to say.
So we'll keep right on going.
Because I don't have a lot of good stuff to say about him. So
right.
I'd rather not.
We'll
talk
go
about
on to the
him.
Next question.
Thank you.
Tell me
I'd have to be out drinking with you somewhere and then, oh boy.
Tell me about your children. What life was like when they were young and living in the house?
Oh, the kids were happy. I mean, you know, as they could be, they got over when George and I, when I divorced him and moved. We moved back to Ipsy. I think I was working for public housing then, so we lived in public housing in the new units that were down on Grove, and they were nice. And the boys were getting older then, and they, of course, wanted to play ball for their dad. That's fine, so they could stay there. They really had two homes, but the girls were always with me mostly. So, what else did you ask? Oh, I had four children.
Okay.
Chippy, my oldest son, died. He died in 2002. That was...
Sorry to hear that.
That was a hard one. Chippy was always my wild card, I call it. He was just, he was born in Belleville. When he was born, we lived in Belleville. And George's dad really had this nice home built. It was ranch style, it was brick and fireplaces, movie screen, just really a nice place. And Tippy, I remember Mr. Thompson talking about Tippy is my oldest son. His name is George, he's the third, but we call him Tippy. He would wake up and there were deer around and all kind of animals, and he just loved it. As he grew up, then he loved to hunt, and he got a deer that I didn't like that so well, but he was my wild card. But Tippy died, his death was like I never will forget it. I was in bed one night. It was, I can't remember what day it was, and he was living in the condo that I had bought. So him and his girlfriend typically couldn't keep a job. And when hunting season would come, Tippy would quit his job to go hunting. And I'd say every year to him, "You quit your job, I'm gonna kick your butt. Don't you quit your job to go hunting." He may not have done it one year, but after that he went right back. But he loved to hunt and fish. And everybody who knows Tippy knows that's it. I said, "You might," when he went away to college, I think he learned to drink more beer than he did anything. He stayed half a year and that was it. I didn't bother with that because I know this kid is like that. But he loved to hunt and fish, and that's what he did. But anyway, what happened was he had hurt his foot and he went to the foot doctor. And when I got this call, his girlfriend said, we can't wake him up. And I said, "What do you mean you can't wake him up?" And she said, "Gail gave him some medicine because he was in pain." This is my half-sister who was I don't know. Anyway, she did a lot of drugs and everything she gave him. And I said, okay, I'll be right there. And when I got there, they weren't there. And somebody said they took him to the hospital, so I went to the hospital. And when I got to the hospital, the police were there. And there was a lady there, it's a Catholic hospital, and she was a nun, I think, but she didn't have on a nun. And she walked up to me and she said, she told me that he had died. I don't remember how I felt. But then she walked to the room and she was saying, but I saw him laying on this gurney thing. And it looked so handsome. He was a handsome kid. He was a very handsome kid. And it looked like he was asleep. And I remember standing there looking at him. That's all I remember. I remember that. I never did cry. And I don't know. And then everybody left. I was just standing there. And after that, I don't know what happened. But anyway, that was in 2002.
So sorry to hear that. He was your oldest?
He was the oldest. And Dee, my daughter. Dee and Dina both went to Eastern. And they're both the girls got their master's degree. Dina teaches in Northville. She's been teaching out there for almost 20 years now. And she's the only black teacher out there. Northville was still, there was one other black teacher, but she retired. And Dina, they love her. The kids love her. They would go home with her every day if they could. And DB was the director of the senior citizen complex here in Ipsy. But when they reorganized and closed down on something, she lost that job and she's driving a bus now till she finds something, but she's got a job. And DB, they have three kids. And Tippy never did marry. He didn't have any children. And I didn't cry. I never cried. I could never cry. Mm-hmm. You know how long it was before I could cry? It was years.
Years.
Years, I said. And sometimes I talk to myself about that. I think I didn't accept it. And nothing was going to convince me that when my son was dead.
Right.
And I think I just held on to it, knowing that it was wrong, it wasn't right, or whatever. But anyway.
So is your youngest child? was a...
The youngest one is Dina.
Oh, Dina, okay.
Yeah, because it was Tippy and Devi, Delina, and then Gregory, my son, my youngest son. He's in California now. Oh, God, they're in a situation. My granddaughter goes to Stanford University. They talk about Stanford like it's heaven. But it's a good school, and I understand that. And she played basketball there for 3 years. Well, my son, this is my youngest son's daughter, something happened that they didn't like. I think it was when George died. They came home to the funeral, which is Gregory's dad, and Lily is her name. She played, she was a point guard for Stanford University. Well, they stayed home longer or something, but anyway, when they got back, there was a problem. They didn't, the coach did, or something they were doing that they felt they weren't being fair to Lily, and she had been gone, and I don't know the whole story, of course, and I only hear one side of it. But anyway, Lily is not, she didn't play this last season, but Notre Dame recruited her. They just went last week. Now she signed up. She's going to be playing women's basketball in graduate school. She'll be in grad school then because she graduates from Stanford. She's still going to graduate from there because she had been there for 3 years. She'll graduate from Stanford in April, and then she signed up to play basketball, women's basketball with Notre Dame. And the kids, they're so protective. Gregory and his wife are so protective of her. The girl never... They're just overly protected, and I know they are, you know. But that's their kid. So the kids say, Lily's going to Notre Dame now. She said they're going to move again because every time she goes somewhere, they move there.
They
and
follow
I said,
her, huh?
I don't know.
Well, is she interested in playing professional basketball?
A lot of those players now, the star that graduated from there, a lot of them go to.
Okay.
Italy and
that's what I was wondering about.
Stuff. Yeah, and they're there, and they've been there, and yes, she is looking forward to going
that.
There to play and
okay.
stuff. So,
okay, so we're going to move into work and retirement. I think you probably covered a lot of this, but
yeah.
What was your main field of employment? I just want to make sure we got that.
Social work, even before I had license, when I worked for public housing, started programs, I did that. You know, there for kids and senior citizens and carried through. And then in research, I did a lot of that, still talking to people and recruiting people. It's a lot of time with groups and people. And then military, some.
So social work was your main.
And that's what I retired from.
Social work.
Okay. Yeah, in research at that time. But you know, even in nursing, you use social. I mean, you know, same kind of thing. So I include nursing in that too, you know, because it's a lot, so much the same, and the way you have to deal with people and problems and all.
So where did you work in terms of here doing social work? Was it at an agency at the hospital? Or?
I worked in VA hospital.
VA hospital.
For a while, yeah.
Okay.
But I worked in health HSR&D. That was our program. We were housed out at Domino Farms for years, and then they made us come to the hospital because most of our patients were veterans, you know, some point, and so we should have been at. So we moved to the hospital, but now they moved out of the hospital again and out where Pfizer was. Yeah, and so I don't know what they're doing now, expanding, but they're still HSR&D, is Health Services Research and Development. That's who I worked for all the time, but we were still veteran employees, federal employees there. So that's where I retired from.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What is the biggest difference in your field of employment from the time you started until now? What have been some changes, some of the biggest differences?
Not much.
Not much.
I mean, always working with people or kids, one of the two.
Right.
I believed, and I still believe that, especially not just for kids who live in public housing, but I believe that it travel and life experiences for kids is one of the best ways of teaching them, you know. So when I was at public housing, I had an opportunity to do some of that because the director would go along with it. So what I did was start a program for the kids and take them places. At the time, it was good because I knew a lot of people in Ipsy, and at the police station, they had a police bus at the time, and Joe Craig was working there, and he volunteered to drive us. So I took them to museums and to, they wanted to go to Cedar Point, you know, that was their idea. I didn't like that one so well, but they wanted to do it, and I know a lot of them wouldn't get a chance to go to Cedar Point if we didn't do it. So Cedar Point, took them to Wayne State, to some of the plays, and just some little things, just to take them somewhere, give them exposure. And I said, when I retire, I'm going to get a program together so all these kids can go somewhere. I'd like to take them to see the sequoias in California, you know. I haven't done very well. I've done some writing, but I would need someone who's good at contract writing. You have to have so much. But anyway, that's just been me. And I think a part of that comes from being with grandparents, because I was also with them when they got sick or something, you know. It was good.
You know, oftentimes those experiences, children, when they get older, will remember the fact that they went to, you know.
I've heard a couple of them have said that. Right. When they see me, I say, wow, I don't remember these kids now.
Right.
They're all big kids now. But I think so.
And my aunt said, you're planting the seed. And you never know where it's going to grow.
Yeah, that's true.
How did, what do you value most about what you did for a living and why?
Say that again.
When thinking back on your working at, okay, that's not what I wanted to ask you. What do you value most about what you did for a living and why? So being a social worker, what did you value most about that?
I guess trying to be a positive person for them and helping people if I could, you know, and learning and knowing what I'm capable of doing and not capable of doing, because I know a lot of people, there's nothing I could do for them, and I wouldn't try. Or I think it would be take more time and energy, experience, or whatever, for me to be in a position to help somebody. I don't know.
So the idea of helping people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Be good too. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people don't have somebody that act very nice to them. You mm-hmm. know, they don't have any
support.
Good touch, you know,
right.
Support, nothing, yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Now I'm going to go into the final part, and that's historical, social events. Tell me how it was for you. You probably talked about it a little bit, but living in the Ypsilanti community.
I always come back, so you know. I mean, you know, it's home to me. I'm here. I have just moved to Ann Arbor to, I live in the university co-op, you know, so it took me 3.5 years because I was paying the rent in a nice place. It's like $1,000 a month or more, and it was kicking my behind. I'm a retired social worker, remember?
Right.
We don't make a lot of money. I think I did better because I was working for the federal government but it was just a lot. And now, you would think I would, and I am doing better, but Courtney's going into nursing school. She graduated from the LPN school. She's going to get her bachelor's either at U of M or at Eastern. Money. I mean, they have parents, but I'll have to tell you something that's not on there. But Courtney's going. Sierra is adamant about, she was going to school in Chicago, Xavier University. It was a private Catholic school, good school. Went up on the call, so she couldn't go there anymore. So she came, and she went to Washington to get an associate's degree, just to get the degree, but she's going either to Eastern or U of M or somewhere. And she's in her senior year of college now. That's Devi's two. And CJ, he's the wild one. I will tell you a little bit about CJ, not much, but I'm gonna tell you because a lot of people make it so terrible, and it's not the greatest thing, but it is. So I got those three going to college. LB's finished, he's teaching, that's Dina's son. This was a smart kid, my grandson, LB, but he's one of those smart kids that you can't quite get to. Not bad, never done a wrong thing in his life, but he's deep. And I don't care what you say to him or what you try to find out, he'll try and tell you and explain it to you. But he doesn't understand that we don't know what he's talking about. You know, right. One of them kids. But he's working now. He said he's teaching people at a VA there how to use a computer and how to set up and how to use programs and stuff. And he's fantastic at it. But his personality is one that's, you wouldn't look at him, you probably wouldn't think. And don't let him try to tell you anything or explain anything to you. He's just out there. So Dina said, did you talk to him? And no, Dina, I don't talk to him unless I have to.
So basically you're providing some support as a grandparent.
Oh, yeah, these kids. Okay. Yes.
So when thinking back on your entire life, what important social or historical events had the greatest impact? I'm going to repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
When thinking back on your entire life, what important social historical events had the greatest impact?
You know, I don't know.
You can think about it for a second and come back to it if you like.
Mm-hmm.
When thinking back over your entire life, what are you most proud of?
Well, I'm proud of my kids and my grandchildren for doing like I wanted them to do, go to school, get an education, be nice to people, you're not better than anybody else and all that. I hate that stuff. That they're doing the best they can. And their work, the girls are very, they say that everybody tells them they're a lot like me because they work and they try to go places and do things, and I always like to travel and being supportive of them, so they're good. But let me tell you a little something you may not be interested in hearing, so you can tell me shut up if you want, and I'll shut up.
I wouldn't do that.
My daughter, Delina, the one that lost her job, she's driving a bus now. But she's got a master's degree. Her and her husband, I give them a lot of credit because they have three children. The two girls I was telling you about that are doing very well. And they have a son, CJ. His name is Cornell Grantham. Growing up, CJ was a wonderful basketball player. And if you know people who are into sports and they really like somebody, he got a lot. And in high school, all the girls were after him and this and that and other. And he went off to college. He didn't stay very long either. CJ has 12 children. CJ has been married once for maybe 3 months. There's no, yeah, okay. You get all kind of compliments about, well, why didn't you get him, he didn't get a vasectomy. I don't know what the problem is. There are some things that happened to him that I think were bad, but still, he didn't have to go out. But all of these girls seemed very happy about these kids, and some of them got pregnant, I think. I can't say definitely, but I believe that some of them got pregnant because they wanted to get pregnant by him. But let me tell you how I feel about this now, because I guess my daughter would be depressed, of course, you know, this boy and these babies. And even now when she talks to him, she said, "Mom, they want this, you know. How could you want to have babies out of wedlock? I don't know. Maybe I don't know. But anyway, a result of this is that 12 grandchildren, from 16 years oldest, 15 to 16, to 4 years old." Yeah, it was a bad thing. By the time he got a vasectomy, but the kids are remarkable. And I don't like for people to get around them and tell them, oh, your daddy, well, that's their daddy. They know who their daddy is, and they know what's going on with him. I also think he has some other problems, but I have to think about how to do more on that. But these kids are all doing well in school. Two or three of them play piano by ear. I think Cordell played at George's funeral and stuff. And they're nice people, nice kids. And they know, you know, about their dad, and that he's not, I guess he does things with them sometimes. It's pretty hard to do, but I think he also stays depressed a lot and can understand that. And Dee Dee and Cornell, that's CJ's parents, do a wonderful job. We have all those kids at Christmas time, all the kids during the summer. They do things together and they go places together. These kids are people, you know?
Right.
You have to treat them like people now, and that's what I believe.
Nothing to do with who their parents were, but they're people, yeah.
So I don't have a problem with it anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't talk about it much because when you tell people that, the first thing, and I understand, but at the same time, I don't want to reinforce all this stuff that they're saying. And I'm predicting that these kids are going to be just fine. I think they're just fine right now, you mm-hmm. know, so I don't care what you say.
Right.
But I don't like to get into a conversation, Bob, but they're a lot of fun.
And they're your great.
Great grandchildren.
Right.
And I try to keep up with the birthdays. I have a folder. I almost brought it with me. I had it. I said, oh God, I gotta get 12. And what I decided to do was give them $1 a year for their birthday, when their birthday come around. Well, there's a set of twins in there too, so theirs will be pretty soon. And I said, God, I don't know if I should have started this or not. So I'm looking for a part-time job. You hear anything good,
I'll let you know.
Because I got to keep it up. I owe $12 to one of them now.
Okay.
Okay.
So this is your last question.
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give to the younger generation?
Prepare yourself, for the future. Think about what you want for your future and how you can get it, and be nice. Be nice to people and good to your parents and family and friends, and do what you think is best. I don't know. It's hard to give advice to people.
Well, that was good.
Just health, wealth, and happiness.
Health,
let's strive for that.
Okay.
Health, wealth, and happiness.
So I just said that was the last question, but actually I'm going to ask you one more in terms of why do you feel it's important to do Living Oral Histories, what we did today? Why is that significant?
Oh,
why is it important?
I think it's very important. I think it's important for the kids to, that's one of the things, oh, back to that question. What I've done at my house, you ought to have to come see my house. I got pictures around every wall. But I have my grandchildren who have finished college and children. Well, I didn't intend the children, but after I started doing, put all of them in cap and gown in a picture, a portrait in a frame. And I put me first, and I'm putting them after six of them now.
Right.
So we do that. But do you know, and I have pictures of my children, each one of them when they were 5 years old. They've been hanging, now they're 50-something, and they're hanging on the wall. And I think this, when I think about that, and I didn't think about it much until lately, I think about letting them know that they're loved and they're just concerned about them. But when these kids see their picture in the cabinet, you can see just the sparkle and the loving, you know. And now if I took those four grown kids of mine now, who's once 50, Tippy died, and he would have been, they have a fit if they don't see those pictures hanging somewhere. And I think these grandchildren, and I'm doing it now because I want the grandchildren behind and the great-grandchildren behind them to feel that way too. And it's not so much about money and this and that, it's about love.
That's true.
You know, that's
true.
What it's about. And I now get the feeling that they know that, and they feel, because typically the grown ones, they always got something to say. And then their kids come in, and their kids will say, that's mama, is that mom? Or their grandma, is that her? You know, it's amazing. You have to come to my house. You too, Matt, you can come and see all my pictures.
Okay, I have to do that.
People come in and say, woo!
So
I'm sorry, you finished.
That's okay. So the importance of doing this kind of thing is maintaining in history to pass on. Mm-hmm. Right, so.